Welcome to Soul Busy. I'm Reach.
And I'm Carly,
your CEO
and COO
sisters. We share unfiltered convo on balancing hustle with mindfulness
while running successful businesses with soul
and the real life between it all.
Jen DeAngelis is the founder and CEO of 1987 Label, a 100% limited edition loungewear, and tasteblank.com. Jen launched her first company out of college and today has a large following and incredible products and brands. Prior to becoming an entrepreneur, Jen led the digital strategy for Fortune 500 companies and worked the red carpet for events such as the Golden Globes. Jen has done the entrepreneurial climb and we are so excited to chat with her today. And Carly and I, side note, are personally obsessed with all of her drops. Welcome, Jen. Jen, hi.
Hello,
Jen.
Hi.
Hey, Jen. We love. That's not a lie. I literally like send Rachel every ad that comes out, and I'm like,
no. Not only does she send me every ad, she buys me the sweatshirt.
I do.
Like there was like a best friend.
We have the best friend.
We have the best friend sweatshirts.
We fought over the purple one.
Yeah, I have the purple one. So yeah, thank you so much.
We first met because you guys came into the pop up, and then I know Sleepy Tie eventually had their own pop up at the Current, but yeah. I remember just such a warm welcome and your energy was just like so positive and warm. And that's awesome because I think in terms of meeting other people who are doing, you know, entrepreneurial endeavors, it's kind of a mixed bag in terms of.
You never know.
Let's talk about that.
We want the tea, Jen. Well, also though, total side note, like I remember growing up, like always being so annoyed with my mom, like everywhere we would go, she would engage in these like very long, in-depth conversations with people anytime we'd be go shopping. And particularly, I think it was like Nordstrom at like the perfume section. There was this one woman she would always talk to and I'd like, could you shut up? Like, please. I'm pretty sure that woman was your aunt. Am I right?
I can say because my aunt knows your mom. And
yeah, they're like best friends.
Well, no, they're not like best friends. They like always meet. They like love each other. And I saw her in Nordstrom recently and we were talking about you. So just lots of synchronicities. We're big fans of your product, but also just like you as a person. So happy to have you here and just ask you 8 million questions. Yeah. But it's going to be a fun episode. So can you just start by telling us your story and like telling all the listeners about your businesses, your brands? You know, obviously we know, but we want them to have the scoop.
Yeah. So I think my story starts to get interesting around 2020. So obviously we know the world shuts down and I had recently finished my MBA at Berkeley. And within that program, I was focusing on entrepreneurship and I entered into an accelerator. So an accelerator is basically like a boot camp for new companies or ideas. And then depending on the accelerator at the end of the 6 weeks or 12 weeks, you have a big pitch day. So it's like a big demo day. So you go out in front of hundreds of people and venture capitalists and you pitch your ideas. So
that's scary.
Yeah, totally. Really scary. You kind of have to fake it till you make it when you're out there, especially like the Q&A section, because you can prep and rehearse for the pitch section, but ultimately you don't know the questions that will be asked. So long story short, ended up winning second place, which gave us 10 grand. Then we were able to win different scholarships from Berkeley to really get this program up and running. So that's kind of the background. I finished my studies. I'm in the middle of building this company and the world shuts down. I'm in New York. And side note, like my dad's from Natick, all of my aunts and my uncles and my cousins, they're all in Boston or just outside of Boston. So we were hearing a lot of rumors like, oh, you know, New York's going to shut down. They're going to shut down the bridges. Like you should get out of there. So
my weird time.
Yeah, crazy. So my Aunt Lisa took me in and I was in Mendon, Massachusetts, and I had a minute to just sort of take inventory on everything that was going on. And ultimately I realized I was in the wrong relationship for me and I was running the wrong company for me. And I remember, so that's a really scary place to be, especially when, you know, I think from an outside perspective, I was doing everything right. You know, in your 30s, being single, that's frowned upon. In your 30s, when you have some traction with a company that you've won money for, taking any sort of pivot, that's also frowned upon. So I remember just feeling really unhappy and finally recognizing like I'm in the wrong relationship and I'm running the wrong company. And so I remember one night I could not sleep at all, you know, that kind of like fear, anxiety that bubbles up in you. Mm-hmm. And I pulled out, I created a whole pitch deck on what is today 1987. And I remember the logos, the color schemes, like the whole idea just coming together as if like my subconscious had sort of been building this architecture behind my back all this time, because it felt like a huge download. And so I remember I sat with my dad and I pitched him the idea, and he just looked at me and said, you know, if you love it, go do it. And I think that was the permission that I needed at that time, because again, everyone thought I was so crazy for, you know, stepping aside from what was quote unquote successful at that time. And then Berkeley, like AI is king, tech is king. It's interesting, it's disruptive, and clothing was very much not that. So I kind of had to let go of my ego and just sort of let my soul come through and be like, I love fashion, I love clothes. And if you love something, as you guys know, when you're building anything, it takes 100 hours a week plus. It's full on. And so you really have to love what you do, because otherwise, you know, it's going to be treacherous for the first couple of
100%.
Years.
100%. Amen. So
that's kind of when the whole idea started. Then I moved to Boston officially, launched 1987. And at that time, and feel free to stop me at any point.
No, I want to stop you. Keep going.
So at that time, TikTok was sort of in an early adopter phase, where people were just starting to see the platform and basically anything you uploaded was getting traction. And so I came up with this idea. I actually had been stood up by a guy and I was feeling really down. And I was like, honestly, I just want to go do something for other people and kind of get out of my like sad victim mentality here. And so I was like, what if I do a scavenger hunt where I hide 1987?
I remember that. I was thinking about that as you were saying that. That's smart. Around Boston. So
if you don't know, I would just run around Boston and hide hoodies and get clues like a scavenger hunt. And people would literally come like running. We saw a girl like jump over a fence one time. We just seen the craziest thing.
That's amazing.
People kind of tug of war over something. So it was sort of a magical time, because although obviously the pandemic brought a lot of negatives, a positive was we were able to connect with our community in a safe way, right? Because social distancing and whatnot, that scavenger idea was a way to really include our community and make it interactive, but also safe. So really kind of, I guess, going back into 2020, we were all starting to wear loungewear a lot more than we had previously because we were all at home. And I remember just looking at what was on the market and I was like, I feel like the silhouettes could be more tailored and more through like a feminine gaze. I feel like if we use better fabrics and fits and structure, we could create a better form. And so it was about kind of elevating that loungewear into a more like luxurious vibe. And so that's kind of where it all started. And because thanks to TikTok, pretty much since day one, we've been selling out. And I think the limited edition piece is always a big interest point for people, like, why are you guys 100% limited edition? And honestly, that came from a need base, because I was self-funding this company. I don't know if you want to talk about that at all, but only 2% of all venture capital goes to female founders. So that means a lot of us women are bootstrapping or self-financing our companies, which means that we have to be really creative and make a dollar stretch. And so one of the kind of problems at the beginning was I could only afford so much per run. Totally. And so I thought, well, why not make my greatest weakness my greatest strength, which is turning this into limited edition scarcity, like, you can get it, or if you miss it, you don't get it. It's never coming back. And so that's kind of where the whole idea came from. But if we look through brands like Hermes and like the Birkin, there's Supreme, there's a lot of case studies that showcase that this limited edition model really pushes people to purchase, because again, if they don't buy it now, it will never come back in that same style and hue. And so it really pushes that kind of fuel of scarcity, which is kind of interesting. So I think when we think about an entrepreneur starting out, it's a creative thought starter to be like, okay, is your greatest weakness really a weakness, or could you turn that into a strength? And I think that was a challenge early on. And because of the success of the model, is obviously something that's kind of our bread and butter now today, but kind of an interesting start.
Do you ever think you want to have like a core collection that doesn't go out of stock, or are you continuously going to do the out of stock vibe?
So
asking for a friend.
Yeah. I know. So we recently brought on a PR team, and that's kind of been a challenge with PR, right? Because if we're selling out to get vote coverage or whatnot, it's like, well,
it's gone.
What are we doing? But I also think what an issue that I've seen with a lot of companies that as they kind of get to the growth point that we're in is that you get a lot of outside pressure to essentially become like everyone else, to widen that reach and increase the revenue, hypothetically, right? If we have more units always available from like a PE firm standpoint, that would be like, oh, well, then you can make more revenue. But I think that's where a lot of businesses get lost, because they take away what has made them special in an effort to appeal to a wider audience. And so one day you look around and everything that was once special about your brand is no longer special. And I think you can see these with like influencers or celebrities, et cetera, where you kind of see this like huge rise because of what makes them special, this adaptation to be like everybody else, and kind of this flat line or maybe slight interest and increase in popularity initially, but then you start to fail because, again, what makes us special is our 100% limited edition.
I agree.
Yeah. But I know from a consumer standpoint, it can be really frustrating, right?
No, I really agree with what you're saying.
I do too. I support that method a lot. And honestly, it does create scarcity. And we are not victims, but we are people who shop your brand, and we get excited when we see the drop and we want to buy it. We want to be a part of it. You know what I mean? So like, I agree with you that you don't need to let go of that. But, and as far as PR is concerned, I feel like you can just PR the shit out of the concept.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you could just go general. But it also shows that you really care about your brand and like why it's live. It's not just about the dollar for you. Like you're not just going to do what everyone else does just to make more money. You really care about the concept and following that. And I really love that.
I also think like it's all about injecting a little excitement into our everyday weeks. So if you see that we're dropping something that's a fun, like you're checking in with your friends all week, like, are you going to get this one? What about this one? Let's plan our buy. And then Friday, like you get it or you don't. If you don't, you're like, oh man, like I'm going to sign on early next time. And if you get it, you're like, I won this, you know? So
yeah, no, it's creating a community.
It's awesome.
And I agree with you. Keep going. Yeah. If it's working, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. All right. So obviously we're on the podcast Soul Busy. Obviously you're an incredible entrepreneur who's just like living the vibe. Soul Busy means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but there's like some themes. So we like to ask all of our guests, why are you soul busy? You know, how does that apply to your life?
Yeah. I once was introduced to the notion of like primary and secondary like hunger or appetites. And so if you think of like Maslow's hierarchy, a primary hunger would be like, you actually need food, you need shelter, you need, you know, to feel safe. And then at the top of the pyramid is self-actualization, which for me means that my secondary appetite is like my soul being hungry, my soul being like, oh, I want to be fed. I want to be doing something that's creative and exciting and that I care about. And so there's been a lot of periods in my life where like the bottom of that pyramid has been chock full, right? In my corporate era, I was well fed, I was traveling, I was doing a lot of great things, I was learning, but my soul just felt like, I want to do more, I think I can do more. And the sort of North Star of my life, I've always wanted to be a role model and to show women like, hey, I'm just an average girl, and if I can do it, you can do it. So whether that's in business or, you know, whatever I've decided to take on, that's my North Star. So when I think about Soul Busy, to me, that's an amalgamation of not only feeling like safe and fed at that like lower level, but also like my soul is getting to do what it wants to do, which is create and fashion and hopefully that role model angle. So I think there's a lot of times in our lives where we oscillate between one or the other. For example, like when you first start your entrepreneurial journey, your soul's really fed, but you're like, I need money.
But you're not physically fed. There's no bread.
Can I crash on your couch type of thing? So it's kind of trying to balance those skills. And I think at this moment, I'm in a really unique and beautiful situation where I feel you know, not only safe and fed and happy, but also I'm getting to do things that I really love to do, which I, you know, I know is such a great honor, and I try to never take that for granted. But I'm sure you two know, like, it also takes an enormous amount of work to get to that point. I think it's both. I don't know if that's helpful.
That was a great answer.
No, I really liked that perspective on that.
That was a very, you're smart. Impressive. You're very smart. All right. So tell me a little bit about 1987. Like, why is it called that? Tell us the scoop.
So I guess I haven't really done the pitch on 1987. So if you don't know 1987, we're 100% limited edition loungewear. We only drop each style in each color one time. And we're Boston-based, Boston-inspired, which means that all of our nomenclature is based off of, Boston neighborhoods. So we have the Back Bay set or Boston vernacular. One of our colors is Wicked, because we often say, oh, that's wicked good, that's wicked cool, that type of thing. And so in terms of, kind of what we're doing with the brands, it's all about, that elevation of loungewear. And I'm sorry, I completely forgot the question.
That happens to me all the time. Why is it called 1987? I'm so present sometimes answering the question, and then I'm like, wait, and then I think of something else, and I go off.
She wanted to tell us about the Boston.
I love that though. Keep going. Just go off, queen.
Italian ADD kick again. I'm like, wait, what?
I'm with you. Understood.
Yeah, so 1987 is the year that I was born. So everything that is about the brand is really personal to me. So, for example, my love of Boston really overflows in terms of all the names of the styles and things like that, but also 1987 just being the year that I was born. So I try to make sure that as we grow, there's always kind of that organic and initial tie-in to who I am. And now I have Sarah, who is our chief growth officer. She's also a partner in the company now. And so it's also an extension of things that she loves. For example, she loves sports. And so that bore out the Home of Champions collection, which basically Boston has won 44 national titles. Obviously, the Celtics just won, so this is really timely. But we try to make sure that every collection that we're creating is personalized and interesting to us specifically, so that it never feels... I think a lot of times when we're creating, we can be in a competitive mindset or we can be in a creative mindset. So a competitive mindset is let's say I'm Hyatt. It's looking at Hilton and being what is Hilton doing? Oh, they're doing more spas. We need more spas. Versus a creative mindset is kind of shutting out that noise of what everyone else is doing and looking within and being what do I want to create? What would be fun to bring to the market? And also, of course, listening to your customers. Our customers are number one in priority, and they let us know what they like and they don't like. And in DMs, they're always telling us oh, let's do this with this color and da da da. So I think some of our best collections have also been a collaboration with our community, because they let us know in a democracy type of way, hey, this is what we want.
I love that. That's so cool. So you also have another brand.
Yeah, I'm so blank.
Tell us about that. Let's plug that.
How did you even get into that?
We were doing some research as a team. It was really cool.
So Blink is instant coffee. And again, how this all started was in 2020, I was with my aunt Lisa, my uncle John, and I am a live must have 10 cups of coffee type of person, otherwise I can't survive. And they don't drink coffee, so we didn't have all the accoutrements to make it. We don't have Nespresso or things like that. So I found instant coffee at that time, and I was wow, that's actually super easy. You can just add it to water, hot or cold. That's so much easier than what I've been doing, and it's inexpensive. But where I felt there was a lot of room for improvement was branding. All these Folgers and whatnot, they were branded in 1980, but not in a cool retro way, just in a red way, and then forgotten. And now they're just on the shelves.
Dinosaurs.
And so now I think actually back to TikTok, a really interesting thing that what happened was the whipped coffee, and
I people were using
instant coffee to create those. And so there was a huge spike in demand and interest in instant coffee, and it's really starting to explode. But again, there hasn't been a lot of innovation in the category. So my thought was could we bring flavor and could we bring fun into the category? So that's really what Blink's about, is kind of making adulthood fun. We have jokes on the packages and things like that. But we have fun flavors, almond croissant is our top flavor.
Yum.
And so we ran our MVP, which is a minimal viable product, meaning we created like 7 different flavors, brought them to market, put them on Amazon. And that was an incredible learning process for us because we got so much feedback about what people loved, what they wanted to improve, things like that. So right now we're in our 2nd run and we're creating a variety pack so that somebody can buy one thing and try all the different top flavors. Oh, that's great. Yeah. And we've also switched to like sachets versus loosely packed because a huge feedback point was like, I don't know how much to scoop into my coffee. But I think one of the things I love about instant coffee the most is that you can actually add the powder to cold water, then ice, and you have an iced coffee, which I
didn't know. Yeah, that's great. Not watered down at all. And you could pick your strength. I never even thought about that. I always thought it was hot. So I love that.
Yeah, right? It's like, whoa, this can dissolve. And I think now that people are so into like electrolyte packets and like Bloom and things like that, it's kind of a great market opportunity. In addition, also, if you go to, I love, you know, Blue Bottle, but sometimes it's like $10 for a latte. I'm like, wow. Like, if I have two of those, it's $20. That's kind of crazy. So the idea is to sort of replace one of those cafe coffees and be a little bit more industrious with your spend. But we've gotten amazing feedback, actually, a lot from retailers. So, like, I can't name any of them, but you know, places that you would go to shop for food have reached out to us and they're like, we think you've really innovated in this category. Like, are you guys interested in being point of sale, meaning like somebody can walk into a grocery store and actually buy us versus just Amazon? So those are discussions that we're having at this time. I think that'd be really cool to have something in a grocery store because it's very different from 1987. But yeah,
that's amazing. So like, as far as your week is concerned as an entrepreneur, like how is your time split and like, what are you spending your time on? Like, because like, I can obviously relate, we both can, like, to our time being split on multiple focuses, right? So for us, our structure is very specific every single week. How do you structure your time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you agree, like there's never enough time in the week. There's always things you want to be working on, but I'm really into time blocking. So for example, on Tuesdays, I try to do all my calls. And so I section off different days to have different priorities. For example, today's Thursday, we have a launch tomorrow. So that's like text, eBoss, plan your buy, all the Shopify listings, making sure our prices are correct, images, da, da, da. But one of the things I recently read, buy back your time. And it has this concept of basically working on the business, not in the business. So that's been a huge thing that I'm trying to do right now is auditing my time, looking at where are my hours going and where could those easily be going to someone else on the team.
So delegate that to elevate, honey. Delegate to elevate.
So that I can.
Do you have a full team, Jen?
Sorry?
Do you have like a full like team of employees?
Yeah. So we have a core team of like 5. So, and then we have a lot of partners like our fulfillment and our warehouse and our PR and all that. So we
and
have
like some partners.
Right. So we have a lot of partners in addition to like the core team, but, and we're always bringing on interns and things like that. Sarah, who I mentioned, is like half of the business as well. So she takes on a lot as well.
What are some struggles you've dealt with recently or in the past?
Yeah. I mean, the struggles are different.
Wait, I'm sorry. To go back really quickly, I just have one question on that. So is your team split on both brands?
No. So I have different like silent partners on Blank who aren't on the public side of things. So that's a whole different team.
Got it. Different team. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Struggles?
Yeah.
Tell me.
I mean, early on, I feel like the struggle was cash flow being extremely lumpy. And what I mean by that is
lumpy cash flow.
Lumpy. Yeah, understood. We get it.
Right? So
we're not lumpy.
You put in all of your money to create the product, but the product won't hit shelves for like 3 months or 4 months, 6 months, however long the production timeline is. So like, how are you keeping that cash flow alive? So the weekly drops really help us with that challenge because we always have that consistent cash flow. But I think, making that dollar stretch as far as I can, that was a huge concern early on. I would say today, I once heard from an advisor that every few years, something breaks because of growth. So in December, what broke was our fulfillment. and so December, as you guys know, everyone's buying gifts. It's like a
very busy time. Yep.
And we had basically just outgrown the fulfillment partner. And so packages were waiting for like 2 weeks before they were being shipped out, which is completely absurd. And from your customer point of view, that's unacceptable, right? Especially when you live in a time of Amazon when things are delivered like overnight or 2 days. Yeah. So
it's a love hate with Amazon.
Yeah, right.
I love it for me. Stop doing that.
Yeah. way to make small businesses look bad.
Literally.
So yeah, that was an incredibly frustrating situation to be in because all of our inventory was there and it was really out of our hands. So that's when a partner relationship can be really challenging. But what we did was we did a huge survey. We found kind of the best clothing fulfiller in the United States. And we are now working with them. So
amazing.
But I would say like finding the right partner is so hard. And I'm sure you guys know, whether it's production partner or photographer partner, you really have to kiss a lot of frogs to find the prince type of thing.
You have to move quick too, which I think is challenging. Like I'm sure you can relate. Like sometimes it's just not time to put thought into a choice, you know? So like for us, like we've been trying to find our email marketing partner, you know, like running through people. We're like, nope, maybe you know? And then like we give them a try and we're like, oh wait, we need to like work on this work. But it's like, you know, you have to massage it. I agree with you on the kissing a lot of frogs, but I understand that struggle. You do got to make the dollar stretch and it is hard. It's something people don't think about. Cause if you don't have a big lump of cash and you have to wait until the sale goes live, then what do you do? And then fulfillment, we're in our warehouse.
You have like an Italian accent.
What do you do? But we're in our warehouse right now. We're just like in our podcast room. So like we also run our fulfillment house, which is interesting. It is a challenge, you know, like we're constantly growing into it. So I understand completely. I have a question for you though.
Fulfillment. we've tried to take it internal and it just wasn't a fit for us.
It's not as much kudos as it was like we sell a $29.99 product, right? So it's like to cut the margin on having somebody else fulfill it, pack and pick it, it has never made sense. We were like, we're going to do this ourselves, you know? So it's been a journey, but definitely a learning curve. One question I have for you though is like, you know, business is all about process, right? So like you're dropping weekly, which how long does it take from idea and design, like concept to creation, like hitting that drop? What is that time frame for you? And what does that process look like?
Yeah, I think kind of going back to problem solving, one of the things that we've been really highly focused are SOPs or standard operating procedures. So right now it's all about like, how can we create like templates and flows and checklists processes to make sure that what we're doing is efficient and can also be handed off when necessary. But in terms of that timeline, it can be anywhere from like 3 to 6 months, usually a little bit longer. So we basically create a large deck that has all the designs. For example, right now we're working on a deck that will have all of our holiday in it. And we actually want to talk to Sleepy Ties, so I'll talk to you guys.
We want to talk to 1987. That ideas.
Yeah, mess if you want to see that. So in terms of how long it takes, right now we're working on December, for example. So we're in July, or sorry, we're in June.
We're in July too. It's so funny though, like that's something we've been spending a lot of time on in Sleepy Tie. An e-com brand is very interesting to navigate. You know, there's a lot to learn process-wise because, you know, we obviously own Parler and that's a very interesting service-based brand, but to learn an e-com brand was a completely different level of process than I had ever written in my life. And we found that we had to really work backwards from launch to public date. And then we found all of these milestones along the way. And when we moved backwards from the goal, we ended up finding all of the flaws because I think it's, you know, the consumer doesn't totally understand how many steps there are
in what looks like a simple launch.
Like, when did we write the copy? Did we pick the shop page banner? Did we pick the shop page photos? What is the order of the shop page photos? What is the product description? It's like it never stops. So it's like, it looks glamorous and I think it is, but it definitely requires, I think, grit to be able to bring this process to life. And each e-com brand is so different. Each product is so different. Each manufacturing timeline is so different. Even probably amongst all of your launches, I'm sure the timeline varies. So it's just, it's wild. It's a crazy ride.
I'm interested to know, because like you're very much so obviously the face of the brand of 1987. Do you like that? Like, does it ever stress you out? Like, does that, what do you feel about it?
I mean, my goal for the brand is to be like totally surpass who I am. So I want people to see me wearing 1987 instead of being like, oh, that's Jen the founder. Be like, oh my God, that's 1987. That's so cool.
Right,
so
right.
That's the dream, I think, in terms of, you know, relatability and building a brand story and that founder story. I'm sure you guys can relate to this. Like, people want to know who's kind of behind the brand. And I think there are pros and cons to it. I think it's really cool that people have followed along on the story and they saw me literally packing hoodies out of my closet to where we are today. So I think that's been a lot of fun for those people, especially who have been early adopters. But yeah, I think I took a huge step back, I think 2021 from TikTok specifically. In 2020, I was having a lot of traction and grew a lot. But with that, as you guys know, can be a lot of criticism and negative comments. And
totally.
For my mental health, I was like, I don't know. So I kind of, and that's not really the 1987 community. That's more like TikTok at large. Our community.
TikTok is mean. They're so mean. They're so mean to me. The most viral video that I ever posted has like, I think, 26 million views. Wow. And it was like, God. It was when our brand took a turn. But I think the reason was because I was using the Dyson Airwrap wrong. And it was driving.
So they're like, bitch,
traffic.
You're using it.
They were
wrong.
Like, you're an idiot. You don't own a salon. Like, you're fucking, like, get off. I'm like, whoa. Like, Google it. I'm like, okay, Jesus.
Now
I
comment,
didn't
like,
know.
LOL. Like, on our, oh I'm like, God. I'm like, now
oh,
I just reply.
I can't. But you have to have thick skin to deal with the haters, too, because with success comes haters.
I literally feel bad for celebrities, honestly. Yeah. I don't know how they do it.
Truly.
I don't
well,
know.
Cancel culture is fucked up.
It's
like, really. Because it's so quick.
Mean.
I remember kind of back to like the Dyson thing. I was using the iPhone, which like mirrors the image, and I was trying to open something, and I was like, something along the lines of, oh, I hate being single because I can never open anything. And all the comments were like, she's such an idiot. It's lefty Lucy. I'm like, no, I was going left, but because the
camera was turned.
Yeah, it was turned. It looked like I was doing it right. And, yeah. And I was like,
she's such an idiot. It's Lefty Lucy. That's what we're going to name this episode.
Let's talk about your personal life.
Yeah. Give us
oh, wait,
the
I want to know about the reality
yeah,
TV
reality
show.
Reality TV show, marriage. Like,
tell us it all. You look so pretty at your wedding.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So, HBO show, how that happened is, again, TikTok 2020. I feel like 2020 was kind of my year.
It was a year for you. She's thriving. Yeah. The world is dying. Jen is thriving.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. Like,
it's all good. I'm gonna get on this reality show real quick.
Yeah.
I feel like honestly.
So basically, I was just talking about like how hard it was to be single.
You're
like,
welcome. Sorry.
Okay. So,
oh God, we're always
just laughing.
We always joke, like, never take a meeting after 12. Like, it just never goes well. We're just losing our shit.
It's like silly.
Yeah.
Okay, so posting a lot how awful dating in your 30s is because everyone feels like, oh, you should be wifed up, da da. And so a scout or casting director actually popped into my DMs and was like, hey, we're creating a dating show. We think you'd be great for it.
Hey, you're hot. And get on this TV show.
I mean, there are much hotter people that took part of that. But long story short, I was like a little reticent initially because I was like, ooh, like reality TV, they definitely can make people look really evil. And I'm not sure
scary.
I really wanted to get down that. But on the other founder side, it was like, well, I could wear 1987 and like, who knows? You know, maybe I'll
brand.
Be Mr. Right. So I ended up moving forward with it. We shot at like an amazing property in Lake Tahoe. I think the Kardashians have filmed there. It's like this, I want to say it might have been Justin Timberlake's property at one point, but don't quote me. But it's this huge mansion and it's right near like this big mountain in Tahoe. And so it was like,
I want to go there so bad. Me too.
Sorry?
I want to go
Tahoe
there
so bad.
Oh,
it looks
yeah.
so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. And it's nice because like in the summer it's nice and winter it's nice. But yeah, I remember being like absolutely petrified walking into it, and the theme was kind of, it was like a Christmas, it was basically if Hallmark could have a reality dating show, and you know, those Christmas movies was kind of the inspiration behind it, I think. And so I actually came out as a nutcracker the first time I saw the guy that I was supposed to be dating, and I felt so ridiculous. I was like, you did me so dirty, like you couldn't have done like Black Swan or something.
Just want you to know that this is going live, and yeah, this is flashing, the photo will be flashing. You will provide the nutcracker.
Okay,
and you're gonna relive it.
Was the guy hot?
But I was like, oh, maybe I'll come out as like the ballerina in the Nutcracker. But no, I was like so horrified. I looked like I was in those like trouser pants that no one looks good in, like wait staff might wear. It was just, it was awful. But the experience overall, I think I got a lot of really interesting people. I loved like all of the cast. Like it was so fun getting to know them, but I realized like I'm not somebody that can show PDA on camera at all. It made me so uncomfortable. Like when you're kissing somebody, there are, you know, 40 grown men around you. It's,
I don't want to
really
make
awkward.
Out on camera. I don't like, what do I look like?
No,
making
I don't
out?
Think
I can
know.
Do it either.
Yeah.
Where's my tongue?
I was cut pretty early. I think like the second episode or something, mainly because I
you're
wasn't
afraid
for the lead guy who's super nice and everything. It just wasn't a fit, but also because I was super uncomfortable the whole time. But I would say I learned a lot from like a shooting perspective. For example, when we're doing campaigns and things like that, it was like a huge learning experience to see, you know, how major production works and doing like on the flies, which is an OTF interview. And I think that side was super interesting to me and like the production. So in that way, it was a great experience, but I don't think I would ever go back on reality TV.
Understood. Yeah. I filmed a pilot once for reality TV and it didn't go anywhere, but it was just very interesting, the process. I agree with you. Cause like, you're just like, how many times are you going to say the same thing over and over again? Like it's truly not.
I secretly wish that came to life.
That reality
show. Yeah, I know. Me too. Can we make that?
I was an assistant to not a celebrity stylist in New York City, and I was like a hobbit. Like I had no fashion sense. I would wear like basically.
She had, do you have braces?
Oh, I had braces. Yeah, it wasn't good. It was not good. I can show it to you one. You show me
Wait,
Nutcracker. I'll show you
that?
my pilot. No, I actually am not allowed to put it anywhere. I was only given it to. But I'll show you.
And
your husband. So you didn't meet your husband on reality TV?
No. So my husband Jack, he actually owns True, which is their like energy drinks and supplement drinks. Cool. They can be found at like Wegmans, Walmart, also Amazon. But we met through a mutual friend, and when we were kind of getting connected, we both thought it was a business meeting. We thought it was like, oh, you're an entrepreneur, I'm an entrepreneur, let's all hang out. And so I remember seeing him and thinking like, oh, he's super cute. And he told me later, he saw me and was like, wow, she's really cute too, you know. And then halfway through, we were eating like chips and salsa, and he was like, is this a date? I'm like, I don't know, I think it might be. But yeah, we fell in love like so quick, and it's just been a really amazing ride, because I think at that point I'd kind of given up on love. I was like, maybe I'm just going to be like the cool aunt, you know, like maybe it's my lot in life to be, you know, successful in business, but maybe I'm not going to have that love. Like maybe that's just not in the cards for me. I kind of accepted that. And it's kind of that cliche of when you're not looking for it, it finally shows up. So I feel like it was worth the wait though, because I waited so many years, but Jack and I are just like, you know, best friends, soulmates. Like we love each other so much. We have so much fun together, and it's been, yeah, I think it's hard to explain, but I'm sure everyone knows that feeling when you just feel like so happy.
It is hard to explain.
Yeah,
there is no.
I think mainly I feel so grateful, and I don't think I would feel that grateful if I hadn't had those like 34 years to like flail like dating, you know. It's like, well, I now really appreciate who he is.
That's amazing. And also to have a partner that understands this entrepreneurial climb is, you know, and to enjoy the perks of it too, and the downfalls of it, you know, because it does come with so much. You know, like late last night I was doing work, I couldn't take care of the kids, and my husband just looked at me and was like, go do your thing, you know what I mean? But like he had a golf tournament, and like I knew that he had it for work, and I knew that that had to happen. I was like, I got the girls, go, you know. Like it's just, you got to have that give and take, I feel like, in order to like make this life work, because this is not a normal life.
It's not easy for your partner either, like, but now you and your husband, you both get it, But like, it's not always easy to explain, like, I'm going to be on the phone at 6 a.m. Like, I wake up my husband every day. This morning we were on the phone and he's sleeping and I'm talking to her and I'm like answering the phone screaming and he's passed out.
It was a launch day for us. And there was like a Shopify issue and like, we were like, it was like a whole thing. Like, we couldn't get the price was, it was just like a thing. You know what I mean?
Like, and I don't care. Like, he doesn't care. I don't care. Like, I need that because it's just like, we'll have dinner plans and I'm like, I can't, I need to do this. And like, I need someone who's flexible in those moments.
Yeah. There's nothing more fear inducing than a problem on a launch day.
It's no, like, literally.
Jesus Christ. I mean, like, talk about, I wonder what my ring is going to tell me today. It's going to be like, you were stressed for 4 hours, 44 minutes. Literally. I want to talk about your clothes.
Flatline dead at one point.
No, yeah, yeah, literally. It's like, dead. You were not breathing for about an hour this morning.
We are definitely going to have high stress for in our aura rings.
100%.
Yeah. Do you have this? You need to get this.
I feel like
it's
you
so
love
cool.
This.
I'm interested in like the biometric sphere, but I haven't done anything. Like, I know Whoop and everything. Is that Aura?
This is Aura. It's really cool.
You definitely have some like tech nerd stuff in there in your brain.
Oh, for sure.
You have some like
there's a nerd in
there. I love it. You're nerdy.
I love it. She's like, I
love a little.
She's a hot leisurewear nerd.
It's great.
We just told everyone. I want to talk about your clothes though, because I literally live for those sweatshirts. The You Look Wicked Good. I have the green one, the brown one. I have a set.
Like, well, yeah, I want to talk about like the
quality of your clothes.
It's really like they're thick. Like, they're thick sweatshirts. thick. They are though. And like, I actually genuinely, when I have a psychotic closet, like, and I wear like an old Navy, I'm wearing an old Navy t-shirt to work today, but like, it's just,
don't shit on old Navy.
I love Old Navy, but I'm saying that's like my choice. But like, I go through your sweatshirts and I feel a difference in the fabric. So tell us about like fabric procurement.
Like, how'd you find
it? How does that go down for you?
Yeah.
Not the secret. Give us a little.
The secrets we're allowed to know.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me as a consumer, prior to working or doing anything with 1987, I was always really obsessed with fabrics, and I was somebody who, if I liked something, I would buy in every single color because I was like, oh, I love the fit of this, I love the feeling. Like, there was this company, James Purse. They had like the best
shirts,
and I had like 100 of their t-shirts in every single color. So when I thought about creating our own clothing, that was hugely important to me. So you go through swatch books, which are basically like all the different colors and types of samples of different fabrics, and then you can order like samples of different things. But I was working with our production partner. I was like, I just want things that feel like butter, like things that you just feel and you're like, ultimately, like, oh my god, I want to live in this. Because the goal is, given the price point, we want people to be able to live in these pieces again and again, and that's what you go to every single morning. Like, oh, I'm a little chilly, I'm gonna go grab a hoodie. Like, it's gonna be the 1987 hoodie because it's so soft. So that was like a key priority. And I think it's kind of interesting because every time there's a benefit, there's also like a flip side. So for example, we call it our heavyweight label fleece, which is that kind of really soft, really thick fabric, which is great if you're in the Northeast. But if you're in Florida, that's like, could not be worse for you.
Right. So interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
So as we've grown, we've had to introduce different types of fabric for different climates, and really working with our customers would be like, okay, they want something much lighter, or like a teary cloth or something that they can throw on after a morning swim, that type of thing.
That's
smart.
Now
I think the challenge is really communicating that difference to the consumer. Because for example, if I love heavyweight fleece and I buy a different hoodie that's a midweight, I might think, oh, they've changed their quality or something like that. But it's actually just a completely different fabric.
Yeah, it's like best for,
or you launch those in the summer.
X.
Yeah.
Well, what I find very interesting, and this is a lot to do with Soul Busy, because Soul Busy is all about the contrast of it all. Like, I'm feeding my soul with self-care, but I'm also super fucking busy. It's like, when and kind of going back to what you said, being living in this creative mindset, right, where your head is down and you're not looking at competition. Sometimes I think what happens too is like, you're focused on what you know. This has happened to me so many times in my career, where like, you're like, Boston. Like, what does Boston want? Right. Like, and then you're like, heavy, like thick, like that. And I didn't even think about what you just said for national consumers, because I'm thinking about myself. So it's kind of this funny part of the entrepreneurial climb where you like break a ceiling and you're like, wait, there's other consumers in different parts of the state, like, or the country, I mean. Not everyone thinks the same as Bostonians. So it's just like this funny concept. It's almost a privilege, but it's also like a downfall. When your head is down, what are you not seeing? You know,
makes our jobs hard, because we have to be able to relate to everyone. One question I had for you is, like, is it hard to be inclusive with sizing? Obviously, I know that you are you're oversized. Like, is that you're supposed to wear it oversized?
Yeah. So I think this comes down to another issue of communication. So as you guys probably know, a lot of our sizes run super oversized. So for example, a You Look Wicked Good crew at a double XL actually fits closer to a 4X or a 3X. So a lot of our items are technically great for a mid-size consumer, but I think where we really fail is that we don't explain that to the customer in a great way. Because when we're in the DMs and people are like, okay, I'm looking for a 3X, I don't see anything on your website, then our team can be a concierge and pull all the items that would actually be a great fit. But what we're working on right now is an AI integration. So basically you could put in your measurements and then it would say okay, this is the best fit for you.
That's cool. Yeah.
So in terms of fit, I actually think that we're inclusive, but in terms of communication, I don't think we're inclusive. And I think that's where, I need to improve and our team needs to improve, because ultimately I want it to be a brand for everybody. But I don't think we're meeting that expectation today. So that's
I was just going to say, I literally knew how to order the sizing, because it says an oversized fit.
Well, we can also relate to that, because hair is a tough thing, with sleepy tie, to be inclusive on, because everyone has a different hair type, thickness, length, some is more silky and some is more textured. And if hair is more silky, sleepy tie is going to slip out of your hair probably faster than somebody else. And, we have these consumer issues too, where people are they think it's for curly hair, which we have tried so many times. We're this is for a blowout. You know what I mean? So it's
you can use it if you have curly hair,
like if you started. Yeah. So that is seriously an issue, especially if you're trying to break the mold or do something different.
Copy's hard.
And then also copy is very hard.
Copy's hard.
Also sizing for us is a challenge too, because it's we offer small, medium, and large. That goes back to putting your head down. Medium works, great.
Right.
Then people are no, we need one for finer hair. We need one for hair to our ass. So we went small, medium, large. Our solution recently is that we are adding a quiz to our website, and that's one option. And then the other one is that we added infographics to the shop page. Which I honestly think could be helpful, because it's just I honestly have never actually shopped your website. Carly just sends me the drops and I'm go, and I'm use the card. That's literally what happens. But on the shop page, those sections, I found infographics have been really helpful.
That's an awesome recommendation. We have someone with us right now who's working on a total website renovation. So one of the things that we've looked at is how can we better communicate to our customers what we're offering, and whether that's oversized fit, and infographics are something that we're thinking about introducing. So that's super helpful.
Are you on Shopify?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a whole other thing to learn too, Shopify. I mean, Carly's pretty much a coder at this point.
And I'm not. That's the funny part.
I once designed a website in a week. I once had this visionary download. I was our website sucks. And literally found a new template. I was we're doing it. And did it by myself every night, an app. I think I was really pregnant too, a mental case. Because I was we're almost at holiday.
Well, as big as we are to the public, we're small businesses.
Yeah, that's the truth.
There's no team that's just updating the website when there's an issue at 12 a.m. That's us. That's our internal team. So we have to know, I have to know how to do those things.
Well, it's underrated that we are startups, not only that, we're figuring it out as we go. So it's you're only as good as your team. You're only as good as the vision, how much you stay true to it, how well you integrate that vision on a daily basis. And honestly, where you're time blocking, where you're spending that time.
It's all a learning experience. Did you enjoy your pop-up experience?
Yeah, I actually think that really helped us grow a lot. It's sort of an accelerator for retail. I don't know if you felt similarly, but how do you set up a store? How do you do Shopify POS? How do you merchandise? How do you make sure there's you know, dressing rooms, things like that. So I think it was a really great opportunity for our team to learn about that. So hypothetically, if we ever want, you know, a brick and mortar store, I feel like we're much more equipped for that. But I also think it was a huge just growth moment for us, not only as like a revenue standpoint, but also from our community standpoint. We grew a lot. And I think half of that is just the Seaport's heavily trafficked. People are seeing our logos on the sides of the buildings and they're like, oh, what is that? And we had a You Look Wicked Good signature on the exterior of the store, which a lot of people would come take photos, tag us, which it's really think cute. That social share element really helped us grow. So I think it helped bolster our ecosystem. I wasn't really anticipating that. I thought, okay, a brick and mortar would be great from like a retail revenue standpoint, but I wasn't thinking that ultimately we're acquiring these customers and then they become lifelong customers on, you know, Instagram or text or email or whatnot. So yeah, we had our highest revenue ever in December of this past year, which, you know, you have holiday, but we also have the store and we had online. So it was kind of, and we were doing additional pop-ups and whatnot, partnerships. But yeah, so it's definitely, to me, just helps to build an ecosystem. But I think with a small team, you're ultimately trying to figure out like, how are we stopping everything? And
it's a lot. Oh my God. Such a nightmare. Oh my God. I ended up working it myself with one of our other team members. Like literally, I'm just like, because people don't show up and like, it's like the weekends, right. You have to be there.
That was the hard part of it.
There's a lot of rules too, which I respect and I agree with. It's just, it's a lot. It really is.
100%. It could be. What's interesting about your business model too is like, let's say you did go down the path of brick and mortar, you really don't need much space because like it would be like, let's say it was New York City, like you could literally just be like, this is our flagship store and we're going to put the drops in every week and then you'd have like a line down the street. Yeah. It'd be crazy. I see 100%. It in Soho.
No, literally I think you did like a Nordstrom like pop-up and I couldn't get there, but I was like, I'm going. I want to go.
Yeah, she talked about it.
I literally did. Well, I think it's cool because, and then I think you did it too on Newbury Street. Did you? My stalker.
Yeah, we did pop up on Newbury. We've done pop ups on the Cape, but I think our biggest line was at the Current in the Seaport. We did a Converse X 1987 11/11 event, which we do a lot in like angel numbers and things like that. We had 11/11 hoodie and
we bought those. So go away.
Because
it's your last name, right? DeAngelis is
DeAngelis is of the angels. If you don't know what an angel number is, it's basically like a numeric sequence like 222 or 333 that basically the universe is sending you some sort of message, like 222 is right time, right place. So if you're seeing that and you're thinking about a decision, you'd be like, oh, that's like
there's
a good
my message
type of thing. The first one I ever saw was 777 and that means like luck and right path, and that was when I was actually considering changing from the tech side to clothing, and I saw that and I asked my Aunt Lisa, I was like, what is that, like what does that even mean? And she explained the whole concept of the angels, of angel numbers. So we created our of the angels collection, which is DeAngelis equals of the angels in Italian, and it has a lot of angel numbers and things like that.
Yeah, I love that collection. One thing that I think we need to take note of while listening to you, someone you're on the entrepreneurial climb doing so much, is that throughout this entire conversation, you have blamed yourself. Every compliment that's been thrown your way, you've turned it to something you could be working on. Talked about how feedback is king and how like you're listening to the democracy of your consumer to grow your brand. Like, it's just this growth mindset. You know, that's what this podcast is all about. It's like how we live our lives too. Like, what is your advice for someone on that? Like, you're just, I love the way you've positioned yourself in that way. How is that part of your success?
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I mean, I think you guys will know this better than anyone, but it really does come down to team. You know, like, you guys are both rock stars, but that will only help you to a certain point in your 100%. Business. And then it's about building a team of rock stars and making sure people feel like appreciated and wanted and that their ideas are being heard. So I think if you really want to succeed, that's great that you're a rock star, but it's almost irrelevant at a certain point. You know, you really shouldn't be like the strongest person in your team. You should be hiring people that are smarter, better designers, better at feedback, you know, any side of the business. And I think I acknowledge that I would not be here today if it wasn't for everyone from our initial customers to like my family really supported me when I first launched it, to Sarah coming on board and really helping with a lot of our collections. And so I'm so grateful that for every single customer and every single purchase, I say that to myself all the time, because sometimes you'll have a crazy good launch and then sometimes you'll have something that didn't go quite the way that you wanted. And I always have this mantra, it's like, I'm grateful for every customer and every sale. And I think that has just kept me grounded in terms of like, it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to wake up every day and like, you know, my job today is going on a podcast and talking with cool people. Like, that's so fun. Obviously, there are a lot of days that are super hard and, you know, it can be really tough and mentally draining. But I think most days I wake up really excited to do what I'm doing. I think because I lived in that corporate system for so long and I woke up like dragging myself out and being like, you get Starbucks if you get out of bed type of thing. I've had to live that life where I didn't love what I was doing. So now I'm at this point where I really love it. And I think it's just about sharing that light and sharing that joy and trying to involve, you know, my dream is for everyone on the team to be incredibly successful and have this be a huge learning opportunity and for them to grow with the business and that our customers feel like we care about them. So I guess it all just comes down to like gratitude, which I feel like is so in vogue to say, but you know,
it's true.
Yeah.
It's different when you mean it. When you know what I mean, like the way you just described that, I think it is so in vogue, like when people are like gratitude, like this, yeah, like, you know, this generation, it's not about that. And I can really relate to something you said, because I always say this to myself, like no one has seen every step the way that I have, in terms of like the night I first took a photo in 2010 to right now. I have lived through every step, and I think that that is part of, it's very challenging to do the climb the slow way, the hard way, without like a rich family member who's giving you seed money and like doesn't really matter if you're successful or not. That's also why you feel that gratitude too, I feel like, because you've felt every fucking inch of that climb. So it's like, and then also, like you said, some launches are good, some launches aren't. I always find myself turning back to gratitude when we're having a bad financial moment and we're like, what the fuck? I'm like, oh my God, I'm so grateful for this perspective, because the next time that we have like a really successful moment, I'm going to be like, wow, it's good to stay grounded, you know? And I think it's important to have the contrast.
Yeah. And it's never like, we're fucked, let's quit. Like, it's never that. Like I don't, in my brain, like, I don't even know. Like, it's just like, how can we do this differently
Proceed.
Next time?
Proceed.
What can we do? Yeah. How can we shift people's mindsets? How can we shift our own? And I agree with you too. Like, I'm really about loyalty and like the people that stand by you as you grow and like follow your vision. Like it's really wonderful to watch. Like I really, really appreciate the people that are by our side.
Agreed.
In the hard times, in the rocky times, or in the great times, you know, it's really nice.
Like a second family.
It's a family. It really is.
I think one point that you were making was that over, you know, a lot of times we live in this era of wanting things instantaneously because people can go viral, they can have overnight success, but so many of the quote-unquote overnight successes aren't truly, like Celsius was around 20 years before every, you know, TikToker wanted them.
Right
So I think it's like, I've read obviously Atomic Habits, but also The Slight Edge, which has similar principles, but it's about like compound interest and creating like just a little bit extra every single day, like getting 1% better to your procedure, 1% better effect. To your production, 1% better to your leadership. And while that won't make any sort of difference today or tomorrow, and in 2 weeks, in a month, in a year's time, that compound interest is insane. And you'll see this exponential growth. And one day you will look back and be like, wow, it wasn't this one video. It wasn't that one collection. It was all
the climb.
It was time. And time really is your best.
What was the second book? I want to read Slight Edge. Slight Edge.
Yeah. Definitely.
We read a similar book called The Compound Effect that we talk about a lot, which is like little actions lead to big motion. So it sounds like a similar theory. I feel like we're really like-minded. I really enjoyed talking to you. And I want to know, like, what's next for you? Like, what is your, I hate this question personally, because whenever anybody is like, what do you want for the future? I'm like, I want right now. That's what I, but what is next for you? Like, do you have any plans or any changes you want for your brands?
Yeah. While I'm thinking about it, one thing I want to do is create a code for your listeners. So let's do Soul Busy 20 for 20% off.
Oh, I will be using
so
that.
Excited. Thank you.
I'm just writing that down real quick so I don't forget.
Perfect. Soul Busy 20.
Yeah, you have to do it in the moment or you'll never remember.
That's a good habit right there. Like, you remember, yeah. You put it down.
Put it down. Yeah, write it down.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. But in terms of things that we're really excited about, we just had our Truly collaboration. So Truly Seltzers, Boston-based company. We shot the campaign at Boston Calling. It was super well received. So their team was really happy with how things went. So hopefully we can continue to like elevate that partnership and other partnerships. I would love to do partnerships with like New Balance or Converse, Nordstrom. We've been able to pop up with. I am a huge Nordstrom person, so I'd love to have
same. Them.
Yeah, like what's
that credit card ruins my life.
What was the collaboration with you and Truly? Like, it's funny because that's a drink company. You're a leisure wear. Like, what? Where did you find the synergy there?
So I was connected with the CEO of Boston Beer because we were really interested in doing a unique collaboration with another Boston-based company. And so Truly was a great profile because our demographics are super similar. And if you're at a pregame, you'll see 1987, but you'll also see Truly. And so when I look at companies that we want to emulate at some level, like Supreme's had so many interesting collabs. And I think collabs that aren't necessarily expected are always the most interesting. For example, like Supreme X Oreo, you know, it's like, who?
Yeah, wanted that? I think that's it's so fun, cool. Though.
So that was kind of the idea. So we created a tote, a hat, and a hoodie, and we shot it again at Boston Calling. They all sold out day of, and Truly's just been such a phenomenal partner.
That's
for
awesome.
Us. So definitely hoping to do more with them in the future and additional partnerships. I think those just help us to reach new consumers, be a little bit more creative and grow, which are all great things. But I think, sorry, my voice is going a little bit. My North Star for the brand is to be the coolest loungewear brand on the market, period. When that will happen, I don't know, but that's the goal that we're really building towards. It's just being the coolest brand on the market. So
it might be happening.
I feel like it's presently happening.
It's happening.
Like, I recently fell into like a Zoa Brown, ad thing. And honestly, so I ordered it. Terrible. Did not like the quality, and I literally
I don't even know.
So it's funny. That's I don't know. It's a brand I get targeted for, but I returned everything. I hated everything, and it's just like quality will take you there. You know, you
have it. Interesting. That company is owned by a man, but presented for female. So I feel like it's very much like the male gaze being sold to women.
Definitely, no, I fell for it.
I just think that's what it is. It's like sexy loungewear versus like. Our concept and female team is really focused around like a female gaze. So yeah.
Love it. I have a million ideas for things we could collaborate on. Well, we really appreciate your time. If you want to just tell everybody your handles personally and professionally so that everybody could give you a follow. And then we'll obviously put the code in our description too for everybody.
Perfect. You can find me at Jen DeAngelis on Instagram, Jen DeAngelis with two N's on TikTok. I've started to slowly creep out on TikTok again, so posting a little bit more. And then 1987 Label on Instagram, Pinterest, and TikTok.
Amazing.
And 1987label.com to shop with us.
Amazing. Immediate with your code. Thank you for your time. We appreciate being part of your day and your time block. And honestly, I think you're just incredible. I love your story, and I'm honored to be a part of your journey and your brand in the small way we are. So hopefully we can kind of make that bigger.
We shall keep buying.
We will keep shopping. Shopping the drops.
Love you.
We love you. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Rock on.